Well, time check 6:05 p.m. and you're welcome to Sports Ultras right here on 3FM 92.7. Well, today we are back with another exciting show discussing some of the major topical issues that have been happening in the world of sports over the last 1 week. We'll get into the Community Shield. And then we'll do an Olympic Games roundup because the closing ceremony is just about to start. And whatever starts has to end. And so the Olympic Games ends today. A lot of medals for Team USA, a lot of medals for Team China, and also Great Britain, Japan. Many of these countries have come to the Olympic Games and proven their worth. So many medals to their name, and it's a huge one. Well, there are some countries that did not win anything. Some of them sent 8 athletes, and then the other sent 81 athletes. So the probability of winning a medal with 8 athletes and the probability of winning with 81 athletes, you do the math. Also, would you rather have 8 athletes at the Olympic Games and not win anything, or have 81 and not win anything? I know you're wondering who, but I'm not mentioning any names tonight. Let's move on now and get into the main show proper. Like I mentioned, we'll get into the Community Shield as well, where Man City beat Man United on penalties in that one. Also, we have a big question for you. It says, if Ronaldo and Messi are LeBron James and Michael Jordan, who is the Steph Curry of football? I mean, that's an interesting question there for my producers. We'll also talk about Chelsea and so many transfers for Chelsea in the past 12 or 15 days. Or, you know, basically just the whole transfer window, really, because Chelsea have spent quite a lot of money and also brought in a number of footballers. We'll see how the Chelsea plan is going to play out. Also talk about Man City's dominance in the English Premier League. And then, will it be Arsenal's year finally after so many near misses? Also, how will Slot, that's the Liverpool manager, the new one, how was he going to fare in there? Also, will Manchester United get into the top four? What does the season hold for the Tottenham Hotspurs? So let's begin the show. My colleagues are already seated in the studio. Kelvin is here, Bill is here, and Oriku is here. Gentlemen, you're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
Anyway,
super
I hope you're all good.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So yeah. We are starting off with the Olympic Games, and I just want to go through what my producer has here. But before we go into the Olympic Games, now don't forget that the audio version of Sports Ultra is available as a podcast on all podcast channels on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and all RSS feeds. You can also catch up on all previous episodes, including this one. And let's get into it, because first of all, Team Ghana's baton change on Thursday at the Olympic Games was one of the messiest this country has ever seen. And also, you know, we'll go back and talk about quite a number of things happening in the Games Village, especially with Team Ghana. And then a lot of high points for the Olympic Games that we can talk about. And so we're going to start off with the baton change problems that Ghana's relay team is having. Bill, I'll give you the first bite of it. What are your thoughts?
Very bad. The decisions made even before the race itself should be called into question. Why should Saminu, who qualified, sealed automatic qualification to the 200 meters at the Olympics, opt out of it, an individual event, and rather go for a team event where he wasn't even involved when Team Ghana qualified for the Olympics through that in the first place? He qualified to the 200 meters with 20.12 seconds. the qualifying standard at the time was 20.16. He qualified. He was set. We saw him compete in 100 meters. He was good. So at least, if anything, if you are competing the 200 meters, people will see you more. Even if you don't get into the final, people will see that, hey, I can, Saminu can compete well in 100 meters. He can compete well in 200 meters. At least the brands will even see you better. Mm-hmm. If you are standing out individually, brands will see you and then they can think about investing in you or not. Mm-hmm. So to opt out of that and go into 4x1, causing a whole mess in the scheduling of which athletes will run first and whatnot, is so messy. We qualified with the 4x100 with Ibrahim Fuseni as our starter, mm-hmm. Botio as our second leg, Azamati as our third leg, and Jose Poamua as our anchor. This time we saw Saminu start, Fuseni as third leg, Azamati as second leg. Why? Why would you drop Botio, who hadn't run and who is one of our fastest in this country when it comes to sprinting? Why would you drop him and put Saminu, who had the 200 meter he was supposed to run and decided to opt out just to join? I think the athletics team, the management, they have to be answering some questions, because it doesn't make sense. It really doesn't. Mm-hmm. And why am I hearing that a triple jumper is a coach of Team Ghana? Why is a triple jumper why? With Janida, does he run? Does he understand what goes into baton changing and all of that? Why?
No, but he's been in the mix. He's been to Olympic Games. He's been in the mix. He should possibly know.
Was he the coach of Ghana's 4x100? We have to be serious in this country. He didn't take us to qualify in Bahamas. He wasn't part of the team when we qualified. Mm-hmm. Coach Elam was there.
Yeah.
If anything, take him along. At least he has experience with Azamati, for example. Mm-hmm. He knows him inside out.
Yeah.
He's worked with the relay team too. At least, if you're not going to take him, take the one who took us to the African Games.
Mm.
Why didn't you take him? Why didn't you take the one who took us to the African Championships? Why would you take a triple jumper and make him coach of 4x100?
Oh, he's a big deal. He's a big deal.
A triple jumper.
He's a big deal.
See, no, we are not serious in this country. Hey!
Anyway, Kelvin, let me bring you into the conversation. The baton changes. And,
yeah.
I think that right now we need to start thinking of the future more than anything.
Yeah.
If you are thinking of the future, it means we are thinking of does Joe Paul have the legs to still anchor in 4 years' time at the Olympic Games or even next year at the World Championships?
Joe Paul is going to be like Sean.
Does Azamati have it?
So I think, okay, maybe Joe Paul and then Azamati are going to be like Sean and then maybe any other person in the next 4 years, or Sean, the two are going to be like Sean. So it's going to be quite difficult for them to hit their top speeds. Mm. Maybe the experience may count in the next two World Championships, but next 4 years is going to be quite difficult for us to have these lads at their very best. And especially when, you know, they struggled after they finished Cali to actually keep themselves busy and active and better in the last couple of months and years just before this Olympics. And it's been quite disturbing. Mm. Now, looking at what we have, we can only pray that Saminu continues his excellent form. We have Botio getting stronger and better. And then James Dadi getting stronger. Maybe the likes of Fuseni and maybe some other Ghanaians may pop up in the colleges or something, and then we could get one to add up to it. Or even one of Azamati or Joe Paul could possibly get better or pop up.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, you look at this particular team and it's quite disturbing, especially for the basics of not being able to hand over the baton. Imagine footballers on the pitch and then they cannot trap balls. They cannot trap first passes. They cannot make, you know, runs to, you know, control a ball. We all see how we laugh at Lukaku for his first touches.
Mm-hmm.
Because once the first touch goes away from you, it means you have given the ball away in a 50-50 battle between you and the opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what the loss of baton does. It's the basic skill, the basic requirements that they need to get as sprinters. And especially the lane or the changeover violation. Mm-hmm. How is it that the baton is not there yet? And then the runner or the athlete or the sprinter decides to sprint ahead and get into
out of the changeover zone. Yeah.
It doesn't actually make sense. Just wait for your man once he gets to the tape, because you know the strength of every sprinter.
But also, I mean, I'm not to defend anybody, but when you know that the race is not going your way, and you are
some points.
Yes, you are last in whatever is happening. You just try to, you know, just accelerate so that the person, you know, also gets faster and brings
the adrenaline levels were higher because the other opponents have started running.
Exactly.
It's just like football. You don't tell me because Erling Haaland is running, so as a defender, I should run with him back because he's expecting a ball. No. You stay in your zone to check your back line to see whether your offside trap is right before you move. And that is my problem with what actually happened. Mm. This is not the first time. At a crucial moment where they needed to come top class, they failed. But I asked myself, how do you alter and temper with the team that made the glory in Bahamas? How do you alter that team? From the start, the finish, the chemistry between Azamati and Jopo. I am certain that if Azamati is even having his eyes closed and gets to Jopo, he knows how to hand over the baton to him, because they've just been more like friends and they know their weaknesses and strength. How then do you mix it up with a fresh Saminu to hand over to Azamati and then Fosseini to Jopo? Fosseini to Jopo wasn't even of a big deal than the first one. From Saminu to Benjamin Azamati, because they don't know themselves particularly well. Then it is better off starting with the two experienced sprinters. Then you leave the rest for the two inexperienced guys to finish it up. Hmm. It was a massive disappointment. And just as Bill was saying, fine, you may have some coaches who just transferred, like Ignatius Geza, from a long jumper, triple jumper, to become a coach because, you know, the kind of experiences they have is top-notch.
Yeah.
But how is it that we had a coach who accompanied these guys to Bahamas to qualify for this Olympics, and then you drop him off? It actually doesn't make sense. So the blame is shared by, I think everybody should take his quota for the athletes themselves, the disappointed, for the federation, and even for the coach who decided to even make those changes. I just don't understand, and we'll continue to feel like this if things are not done right. And I don't know whether the athletes did not have their own say, because this time around it was the athletics federation or association that got the coach for them, because when they paid their own bills to Bahamas, I am sure they had influence on what they were going to do and which people were going to, you know, be in the race. But I'm not too clear whether they had an input, as in me as Amati, if I hand over to Jopo, it is better, or Jopo hands over to me, it is better than we going this way. I don't know what actually went there, but they are all total failures, from the federation to the coaches and to the athletes themselves. They should, each one has a responsibility that they failed to play very well, that constituted to this small performance in the 4x100 meters relay.
Very good. Quick one, then we move on to other Olympic stuff. Talk to me about the relay team.
Well, I think the relay problem is in isolation, and unlike me, I'm not even going to portion the blame, whether it's organization, support. Look, let's assume there was no support, there was no investment in that particular event, and the athletes had to strive for themselves. The facts heading into the Olympics were that they were in the top 10.
Yep.
They were one of the fastest relay teams in the world this year.
Yep.
Going by that, there is that expectation. Once again, if you juxtapose it to football, when Ghana was at the 2006 World Cup, we were not investing in anything.
Yep.
When Ghana has had its brightest moments, let's not act like football was being treated, or our leagues were poor, codes were poor. But the moment you get there, expectations are different because of how you got there and the reputation you have. this 4x100 men's team had a very good reputation and had a very good opportunity. In fact, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to really make a name for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they would learn from their mistakes. Same thing happened in Tokyo when there was a disqualification. That time, at least we got to the final, so the disappointment wasn't that bad. But then you can talk about, maybe both you should have started, Samini should. When we had our best four who qualified us, even those guys dropped the baton in Bahamas.
Yeah.
And if there was no second chance, they would have actually not made the Olympics.
Yep.
So our best four that everyone is saying should have started dropped the baton 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And so it's not about the personnel that went there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about support or funding or whatever it is. It is all in the head. I say this because even Team USA, the country that receives the best resources, best training, best facilities, had a lane violation. And so with that assumption, we can then sort of project that you can have the best facilities, you can have the best coaches, but on
the
that day,
time
things
to Olympics.
Yes, things can go wrong, and they're also struggling with that as well. So, and they are like a complete opposite of us. They have everything that athletes need to do their best,
mm-hmm.
and so we can cancel that bit out about how you should be treated. This. That is out. Maybe you're not getting optimal treatment, but once you are there. Countries that are, you know, Ghana even taking athletics more serious than and have a better reputation on the track than are doing better. I just feel that it's almost like we're ready with an excuse whenever we fail. And so the expectations have in their head is like, yeah, nobody really expects us to get to the final. No one, but that shouldn't be the case. That should not be the at this stage when you've already had previous warnings. I don't think that this is down to funding or wherever it is off the track. It's on the track. And whether it's psychological or whether when the stage becomes too big, they just become too frightened to live up to the expectations, that is the issue that needs addressing. And that's why the athletes need to look at themselves.
Mm.
Because I think that they've missed out on a really, really big opportunity.
Yep.
South Africa.
They took it.
Got a silver medal.
Mm.
That look, and Akani Simbine just said, in a relay, you just give yourself a chance once your baton exchanges are good.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need because every individual runner there is fast. Your split time just needs to be in a decent zone,
mm-hmm.
9 to 10. Once your baton exchanges are smooth, you stand every chance of doing well. And we couldn't even do that to give ourselves the best chance. And I think that was more disappointing, that you worked so hard to get here, and then you let yourself down. And I know, yeah, the talks will be about infrastructure and all that, but I see it as you are an ambassador. When you have this rare opportunity, you have that whole expectation and weight on your shoulder to ensure that you push this sport. You do so well that now governments will think twice.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think people from Botswana or the next government or whoever is the incumbent would treat athletics the same after what Ebogio did?
Mm-hmm.
No. Just by creating a holiday, all the rewards to him, you can get a sense of how the people of Botswana felt, their pride.
Yeah.
Now you can make a case for the sport. But if you're always going there and coming back with nothing, you're not making a claim. You're not pushing. We can sit here and talk. But the best way you can make a case for your sport, for investment, everything else, is by showing up. And if it was a case of, yes, the best countries only doing well, then I would understand. But the Olympics always has an underdog story. For those who work hard and stick to the script, mm-hmm. they always get rewarded.
Yep.
I just feel our athletes also have to sort of push themselves more.
Mm.
And we have to change the mentality and the mindset that we're always going to the Olympic Games to participate and all that. We saw, Samotechi,
mm-hmm.
from nowhere, was very determined. Actually, if you spoke to him before and then during his bout,
mm-hmm.
he was always confident.
Yeah.
And that's why athletes, they do not have enough confidence. The manner in which we come up with excuses is just too fast after. It's almost like we're already thinking about excuses. Because if at this stage, you expect me to accept that the stadium was too loud, how? If you want to compete at the best and the biggest stages, of course you have to. you have to play or compete in the biggest stadiums. Of course, you have to compete in the loudest of atmospheres. It's the Olympics, for crying out loud. And you cannot be saying this on your second Olympics. You cannot be saying you've been to Commonwealth Games. You look, if it was a case that the government and the authorities hadn't even given you any tournament experience or event experience, I would understand. But these guys have been to Commonwealth. They've been to African Games. They've been to African Championships. They've been to Olympics. Some of them have even been to a Diamond League.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot be given these excuses anymore. And that was more disappointing. I would wish that they get a lot more investment. But the athletes also have to take a lot more responsibility and make a case for the sport.
Right, hear that from Oreku. I agree with you, Oreku. I think that the relay problem was disappointing. I mean, for you to be in the top 10 in the world, it meant a lot. And so you have to make sure that you live up to yourself being ranked that high. South Africa have walked away with a silver medal, and just looking at them alone was just really good for me. And, you know, thinking through my head that it probably could have been us if we just took it a bit more seriously. But anyway, let's move on now. And let's talk a bit about... So I'm going to ask about your top performances or your top moments at the Olympic Games, if you have any or you remember any. Kelvin, what has been your top moments or your top performance at the Olympic Games?
Obviously, the 200 meters final. Let's see, let the bogo. It was just wonderful to see. You know, I think after the 100 meters final, he was a bit disappointed in himself. He felt he could have actually done, you know, better than what he did. And it was just wonderful to see how he managed to put in the strides to especially on the turn or on the bend, you know, especially when Noah Lyles had predicted that when they see him up the turn, they are going to be depressed. He actually got, you know, the rest of the pack depressed, more depressed than he was, and he took it so calmly, so comfortably, to the point that, you know, I was even feeling he wasn't even running at top speed, and it was just his own calculated steps that got him there.
Yeah,
that was my clutch moment, you know. And though he added the 4x400 meters 1-2, because that finish, giving that American the scare, was just one to remember. And I think that 200 meters, you know, gold was just phenomenal. And it was a very wonderful moment for me. Every single time, you know, it just gets back to memory that, come on, this guy is destined for greatness. And just as Oreko was talking about, this is a guy who doesn't have support, too much support. He doesn't have great support. For a guy who had lost the mother, he has been at this same meet with all of you guys. And he even came up years later after you guys shot into prominence. How is it that he's able to overcome all these kind of tension and then pressure at the stadium, especially when he was racing against one of the topmost guys in there, in Noah Lyles and the rest? And he manages to, you know, move all of them behind him and get to the finish line before them. You know, that moment would just be in my head for a very, very long time.
Bill, top moment, top performance.
The 200 meters comes close second to
me. I mean, you can do two or three. I mean, it's all
The 100 meters.
Okay.
I think the how stacked the squad is, and the fact that 5 out of 8 did either a personal best, a season best, you know, all of that, and how close it was between Lyles, Kishane, and the rest. I mean, having to beat Kishane by 5/1000 of a second or
5/1000 of a second.
I think the race was really wild. To be honest, it brought that anticipation, you know, and it lived up to the hype. And we hadn't seen all 8 athletes actually give a sub 10 at the final. So that in itself has a lot of weight. I think another one was the USA winning the gold medal in basketball, the men and the women together. I think the men, the final, it was getting close at the end. France were kind of closing the gap, but Stephen Curry, man, something else, different gravy. He just showed up at the right moment to give USA the crown there. And then the women as well, it was very highly expected with the kind of quality that they had. And now for the women, it's 8 streets. They have the Olympics on chokehold. As to who will stop them, I don't know who would do that. And so I think for me, the 100 meters, the basketball, those two.
Anyway, Oregu, yours. Top moments.
I think Simone Biles, we all know what she went through in Tokyo 2020. Had a mental block, couldn't compete. And to come back 3 years later and just reassert her dominance, especially in the all-round, you know, it was good to see her smile once again and doing what she does best. And then a new star was born in Leon Marchand in swimming, yeah. Winning all of his individual races, four of them. I think it's good to see a young star come up like that. What was interesting is how he develops from here and whether the comparisons with Michael Phelps would be lived up to by the French swimmer. But I think what tops it for me, I think there were a lot more interesting stuff. The crowds, yep. There was Mundo Duplantis, yeah. You know, breaking his own record yet yep. again. But what stood out for me was Novak Djokovic. And yeah, there's a personal bias to that as well. But it's just his story and how he finally won it on one knee, a trophy or a medal that he had sort of longed for his whole career. And he finally got it when it was least expected, against the best player in the world, Carlos Alcaraz. And I think that was in itself a huge moment for the games, and it's one that a lot of people remember it for.
Well, none of you have mentioned Sydney McLaughlin.
Yeah.
None of you have mentioned Faith Kipyegon yet.
You gave yeah. me one, so I started. So.
okay. I think
Sydney was coming, and then Faith. You know, there's this hammer thrower. What's the lady's name?
Is it a Nigerian?
Yeah, the Nigerian.
The Nigerian. You know,
to come back from that sort of disrespect, that sort of ill treatment, to become, you know, a silver medalist.
Yeah.
It's just great. Hardly would you see it coming. And I think getting to that glorious end where managed to, you know, get it in. So this American who broke Wahom's dominance. What's his name? Is it Ry Benjamin?
Yeah, right, Benjamin Wright, yeah.
It was just wonderful to see how he broke Wahom's, you know, dominance when it comes to that distance, 400 meters, and I was just happy to see it happen. And, you know, I loved how they managed to put, you know, some of the top stars in their right order, because, you know, Wahom, instead of concentrating on his 400 meters, says he's going to run with proposed Diamond League race with that is Mundo Duplantis.
Yeah.
Yes, on a race. We know Duplantis is also runs very well, but instead of concentrating on what he thinks he does best, he just decided to just focus on another. And exactly what Noah Lyles was trying to do. We know you are the king of 200 meters, but to say I already have my wife, so I'm going for a girlfriend. You got the girlfriend, but lost the wife eventually. So I was really happy in those moments when, you know, people were losing it from, you know, the top positions where they have been all this while. But yes, I think those moments to also, you know, ring very good memories for me.
Well, I think that good of you to have mentioned the Norway problem, because yeah. Jakob Ingebrigtsen,
yes,
he also lost his 1500 meters.
Exactly, yes.
And after talking a lot, he lost it, but he came back to win the 5000 yeah. meters. So, guys, I have two questions, but before I go to my questions, I think that one of my favorite moments was the 800 meter men's final, Emmanuel Wanyonyi,
yeah.
And they couldn't break the Olympic record, neither could they break the world record.
Yeah.
But the guy who came in fifth, that's Gabriel Toile from France, ran 1 minute 42 seconds. And this is time that anybody wins or anybody gets on the podium
with
a time like that
yeah.
in 800 meters. But he finished fifth with a time like that. So my question is, maybe Oriku, you should get this one. Have the athletes gotten faster? Or what do you reckon is happening to how fast, you know, athletes of our generation are running better than maybe the generations before? What has accounted for that?
Well, it's difficult to pinpoint what exactly accounted for what I would say the increase in competitiveness of the track and field, but if I'm using the 100 meters as a sample, where everyone, you know, years ago sub 10 looked like something that was reserved for the monsters only.
Yep.
Now, sub 10 barely gets you into the semi-final.
Yeah.
In fact, sub 10 doesn't guarantee you a final, because we know there were runners that ran 9.95 and didn't make the final.
Yeah.
In the final, if you are in the 9.9s, you know you are finishing below top 6.
Yeah.
And in fact, this was the closest race that we had ever seen in track and field history. So I do agree that there's definitely been an improvement, but I think ultimately I'll just attribute it to sport science. I just think there's a lot more detail attached now, and you know, scientists and sports physicians are getting to understand the human body a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing about athletics is knowing your body.
Yeah.
Knowing where to exert your strength to a level where it's not too much to ensure that you don't overproduce lactic acid to slow you down,
mm-hmm.
but you're in a point where you're able to use your energy efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
And because the human body is something that we keep on learning, as time goes on, I think scientists will get more revelations on how we're able to use the body more efficiently. So when it comes to what to eat before races, the types of training to do, what type of muscles you should target, running techniques, how you should finish your race. We are looking at reaction times now from athletes, and you can see how fast everyone starts their race, because now there's technology to be able to ensure that, you know, you measure your reaction time in seconds. How do you constantly improve on that bit as well? So I just think it's the emergence of technology, sports science, and then, you know, that inculcated with nutrition. And the thing about these things is that they are here to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And so you expect more discoveries.
Mm.
You expect much more improvement.
Mm.
And in that regard, I do genuinely believe that a lot of those records, like Bolt's 100 meters record, 200 meters record, it's just a matter of time.
Mm.
It's just a matter of time, because you're looking at someone like Tebogo. I think he ran 19.69 mm-hmm. in the 200 meters. Yes, he's about 21, 22.
Mm.
But he literally came from nowhere. Imagine what he can be in the next 3-4 years if he has access to the best nutritionists, the mm-hmm. best trainers, the best psychologists.
Mm-hmm.
And I do genuinely believe that it's just a matter of time before a lot of these records are broken, because the standards now are just way too high.
Mm.
And it's going to affect Ghana, because remember, even the 10.00 that we were supposed to break to make the Olympics, a lot of our guys struggled. We only got in via ranking.
Yes.
And I have a feeling next 4 years, the next Olympics in LA
mm-hmm.
would probably be more tighter to get into.
Yep.
High jump, the bar would probably be maybe 0.3, 0.5 higher. 100 meters, who knows? Mm-hmm. They can even say now you have to do sub 10 before you get in.
Yeah.
And so I just think that, and if you look at it, interestingly, look at the average age of the guys running and the times that they are running.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Americans have 16-year-olds running. Yeah. Tebogo is 21.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys are very, very young
mm-hmm.
and doing very impressive times.
Yep.
And you look at someone like Simbine, who's like 29, 30.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine what these guys will do in the next 4, 5 to 6 years. I really do think that the sport is going to unprecedented levels. And as usual, Ghana is being left behind.
Anyway, I think that, you know, for me, one of the best moments was the 3,000 meter steeplechase where Winfred Yavi won. She's Kenyan, but apparently when she tried to get on the Kenyan track team, she was asked by one of the Athletics Federation members to pay some money. So she left and went to represent Bahrain. And now she has the Olympic record to her name, beating the former record holder Perut Chemutai. That's another story that's really interesting, because if you think of it, I mean, who from Bahrain gets a steeplechase record to their name? But anyway. Anyway.
But I also think it was one moment, though it was quite a sad moment, was Eliud Kipchoge not being able to complete the marathon.
Yep.
It was just one of the
sad
moments.
I actually predicted it. He shouldn't have come to the Olympics.
Yeah,
but, I mean, what do I know?
When age catches up with you, you just need to. And I think André de Grasse, for someone like André de Grasse, he's not going to come again. Someone like Christian Coleman, he should just leave it for the young lads.
Yeah.
Sydney McLaughlin decided to come because she knew she was definitely going to be. And you could see in the season that, yes, she was still good enough to come for it. Yep. But for those who were not good enough, some stayed off. But the others who decided to come were just disgraced and put in their right places. Hopefully, in the next championships, the next leagues that will be coming up, we are going to see a lot more of what we saw at the Olympics, and it's going to get better. But credit to the Nigerian women's basketball coach. I think Reni Wakama, she's also been voted as the best women's coach for this championship. And Spain are just getting phenomenal day by day.
Bro, I dislike Spain.
What kind of dominance is this?
Yeah. No, I feared for them. I feared for them because I thought they had like the most inexperience. They didn't even use their overage cards well. There were players that you'd expect them to call. So Eric Garcia, Fermin Lopez, I'm like, yeah, these guys are not going to make that much of a difference. But it turned out to be like the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And you know, the way they play is Euros to Olympics.
You get it. They've just proven that the fundamentals have been well inculcated in them. So right from the junior stages, that is how they play.
Yeah.
And it reflects from it reflects in every single team that you see. We saw their team at the European Championship. How many of us predicted that Spain were going to go even to the final? Because we did not have trust. If you have Fabian Ruiz, Dani Olmo, and the likes, nobody had that faith in them. But they got in there. Just like the Olympics. They're under 21, it happened. Under 19, under 17 champions, it happened. And even with their female team, though they did not do so well, but you can see that the fundamentals are very clear. They have a clear DNA philosophy that runs through all their football. And even in the Spanish clubs, you can see it. Look at how they were so relaxed controlling the ball. And then the French team, the likes of Lacazette and likes, were even struggling in a game against these lads, Eric Garcia and the likes. Who would even have thought of that? But I think credit to the Spanish Federation. They are doing something great. Though we don't like them too much. They are still dominating.
Yeah, I don't like them at all.
I think you mentioned this guy, DeGrasse.
Yeah.
You
know, it's incredible how he always makes sure that he would leave with something small.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing about collecting small stones is that I think if you look at the record for Olympic medals on the sprints, that's I think individual, and then for relays, Bowles leads with 8, and then DeGrasse comes in second with 7.
Yeah.
Yep. He's gone past Carl Lewis now with 6.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Which begs the question now that, you know, where does he really fall in the all time rankings? Is there a name that will pop up if you're looking at the best of them?
Thank you for that question. I'm coming back for the all-time list. Crystal Sports Ultras here on 3FM 92.7. My name is Yao Ofosulabi. Oriku, you were talking about an all-time list where you've already mentioned Bowles, Carl Lewis, and Andre DeGrasse. But I just want to find out, if you had to make a top five, who are going to be in your top five? Look, let me warn you.
All generations.
Let me warn you.
Yeah.
Michael Johnson sees everything on the internet. So if you don't add him.
Wait, is this 100 meters?
Sprint. Let's do the sprint. Sprint, so 100, 200.
Let's do it together, guys.
You don't want any trouble.
I think obviously both has
both,
to be
both will stay top.
Both will stay top. I mean, no order. Both, both is first.
Uh-huh.
You know, in no order. So
in no order for both.
I think DeGrasse should have a shout in here.
So you think so?
He doesn't have the name.
I think the clout.
The concrete ones,
I think the actual sprint lovers will not agree with you.
Okay, DeGrasse. Tyson Gay.
Okay, let's do both Michael Johnson.
Yeah, both Michael Johnson. So top five. Yeah.
Both Michael Johnson.
Yes. So now you have three left.
Between Asafo Powell, Asafo Gatlin.
No, I would choose Gay over Gatlin.
Carl Lewis?
Yeah, E4D.
Carl. Yeah, I think I
mean, E4D. If I'm going to the US, then.
So wait, three. Okay. Carl Lewis, Michael Johnson, Bolt.
Yeah.
Okay, two more.
If you are putting Carl Lewis, Michael Johnson, Bolt, is three.
Between Asafa Powell, Tyson Gay, Andre DeGrasse.
So why don't you think DeGrasse should be there ahead of these guys? DeGrasse should be there. He doesn't have that cloud, that aura.
Exactly. It's the reason why he shouldn't be there. Onibi. There's a reason why he shouldn't be there.
Does Gatlin get in there? Does Gatlin get in there?
No, for me, I won't put Gatlin there.
You won't put Gatlin?
No, I won't. His career wasn't. He had a few red marks, so I wouldn't put him there.
Did we consider Asafa Powell?
He should be there. Powell.
He should be there. He should be there for me.
No, you see. When I'm thinking of like all time greats,
okay,
we are talking of one who possibly won Olympic gold in any of the events. Mm-hmm. Asafa Powell didn't win gold.
400.
I mean, the relays are. You know, we don't actually count the relays.
It adds up to the eight.
No, I agree.
But these guys are.
But De Graas has a 200-meter gold from Tokyo.
Yeah, sure.
Bolt has 100-meter, 200.
200 meters gold.
Yeah. Carl Lewis has 100 meters, 200. And even long jump. He has a gold in long jump.
Yeah.
Michael Johnson has 200-meter gold in 96. So, I mean, if someone doesn't have a gold medal at the Olympics or at the World Championships, adding him is very difficult for me, no matter how the career has gone.
So, Powell hasn't gotten any gold at World Championships.
Powell was always like, he always came in, he always made sure that he got on the podium.
Okay.
But he didn't win gold as many times as these guys probably.
No.
How?
Because
okay, you know what? Okay. Let's just end with the top three.
Okay,
let's end with the top three.
I think the top three.
So, Bolt,
and
Lewis,
Johnson.
Okay,
yeah.
All right,
yeah,
all right.
Anyway, Lewis. Wait, Gay also never got anything.
No,
I understand. Who allows
to get a shot in there?
Yeah,
if you are looking at the medals, no allows will get a shot in there, and the grass will get a shot.
No,
the grass has. The grass has 200 meters.
Then Maurice Green probably gets it. That's the thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's Maurice, the thing. These guys.
Yeah, Maurice.
You see, the thing about, I think the grass didn't give himself that level of. So sometimes I understand what Noah Lyles does now.
The
showman.
Must be loud. He should be a showman.
There has to be a bit of that in what you do.
Yeah. Because Bolt was always given that. Yeah. Carl Lewis will give you that.
Exactly.
Michael Johnson will give that to you.
The thing about, so that's one of the things that I kind of fear a bit for Tebogo. But I see a bit of arrogance in what Tebogo does.
Yeah.
You know.
Silent killer.
I see a bit of arrogance in what he does. Yeah. And I think that if he consistently wins at the top level, he'll get to a point where you can actually say that, oh, he's one of these guys who behave this way.
And I think he only needed a confidence booster to start feeling like, yes, I am also a world beater.
Anyway.
So I think after the 200 meters, you see how he ran the 4x400.
Yeah.
He just realized, no, come on. So I am a great now.
No, for him to go into the 400 meters and did the time that he did.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
It means at 24.
43.03 is crazy.
It means at 24 and 25 in the next Olympics, if he stays fit, he's going to be crazy.
But I think we left someone very key.
Who?
Someone very important to the history of the sport.
Who?
Lamon Marcel Jacobs.
So
Charlie, if you want to experience your commentary,
so the 43.03 Tebogo did is actually the world record of 400 meters, and that was what Wade Van Niekerk did in 2016.
What?
So that's actually it. But like I told you,
he doesn't run the
four. It's not going to count now because he was in a relay.
And he himself doesn't run the 400 meters. So
he says he's considering now.
He's going to consider running.
Yes, consider running 400.
And then we die.
So there's an article I saw somewhere this week about Tebogo himself.
Yeah.
So he is in the top 25 best 100 meter runners ever.
Yeah.
He is in the top 9 best 200 meter runners ever.
Yeah.
He is the best ever in 300 meters.
Best
ever in 300 meters when it comes to, you know, running the track in 300 meters, he's the best ever the sport has ever seen. And then in 400 meters, he is in the top 25. So,
he'll drop down to the top 2.
21.
Exactly. So that's the level at which Tebogo is now. Anyway, let's move on and do some football because I know that our listeners will not be happy with us if we don't do football. So yesterday, Man City beat Man United on penalties in the Community Shield. Bill, what did you see?
Onana is a clown. Onana is not serious. I think, well, it's a preseason game, and there's still some good signs for Manchester United. Some good signs, to be honest. But one huge concern is that of Marcus Rashford, because during Ten Hag's first season, he was firing on all cylinders. He was literally Manchester United's best player. But to do a total 180 from the previous season till now, and he's still not looking like he's found his form, is really, really concerning. Someone from the academy, you know, grew into the role as one of the stars of the team, you know, at some point was like the savior of Manchester United, and now he's looking like someone who is easily dispensable. I think is really concerning, and it sort of gives me an indication that Ten Hag struggles at raising the level of players. It gives me that indication. Some people might argue it, and that's understandable.
Yep.
But my feeling is Ten Hag barely raises levels of players.
Yep.
He's not that kind of coach.
Mm.
He can keep you on the same level or you drop.
Yeah. Like Anthony.
Anthony is one.
Yeah.
Rashford is becoming another, and it's concerning.
Yeah. Another Anthony.
Another Anthony.
Yeah.
But Garnacho, solid guy. I think he's doing great. He's destined for great things. But Onana is a clown. See, you can do a lot of mind games in penalties, but you only do it when you are sort of known to be a very solid penalty stopper, like Emiliano Martinez. If he starts doing it, you shake, because the probability of him saving your penalty is high. But Onana, who are we here to mean,
Chick?
So what's the point? What's the point of pointing here and saying, yeah, play it here, and then you go the other direction, they score you, and you can't save some? What's the point?
United fans say he saved one, so he's done well.
Please, he's not good. He's going to concede another 50, 55, 60 again.
Ooh.
This season.
United have bought defenders now.
De Ligt.
Yeah. they've got defenders now. So
Basrawi.
Does he still concede that number of goals?
Oh. Well, it depends on how Ten Hag integrates the defenders.
Mm.
I mean, he bought Euro for a reason, to start him in games. But he's going to be out for about 2 months at least, which is a blow. De Ligt has experience, but he struggled at Bayern Munich. Would he pick up the form he had from Ajax, which was a very long time ago, by the way?
Yep.
And then produce it in a league where if you make a misstep, they can end your career.
Yeah.
Does he have that mentality to beat that? That is questionable. Mazraoui wasn't that highly rated at Bayern Munich in the first place. That's why they sold him willingly.
Yeah, for cheap.
For cheap. And Wan-Bissaka is gone. Wan-Bissaka, who was literally one of the good defenders in the team, he's going. I think it's something to worry about.
Anyway, Kelvin. The Community Shield.
Well, the last time Manchester City won, they did not win the Premier League. This is giving us now fans like Bill and Aniela confidence.
Oh, yes, but we'll be there.
I think this is a Pep Guardiola team that you could see the clear signs. They hit the post away quite a number of times, unlucky. And they are going to get better in the season, you know. Trust you me. Look at what I just saw from them, for a team that did not even, you know, start preseason. And it's always been the same thing. Pep Guardiola starts his preseason like there is nothing at stake, and then he loses games, he draws games, there are times he wins games, and once he gets into the season proper, you know, he starts getting, banging in the results, getting in the point. For Manchester United, signs of, you know, some early good things, but is Ten Hag going to sustain it? How is he going to sustain that? And that begs the question of even his defenders who were in jitters yesterday. You look at the start of the game, I think in the opening 10 minutes or 15 minutes when the Man City hit the goalpost, the defenders were just walking around. They just couldn't find their point. And you ask yourself, how is it that fundamentally you see how teams organize themselves? you can't identify Manchester United with how they would want to play from when they have the ball and when they don't have the ball. It's more like, let's just do our bits to get the ball whenever we can. But there is no approach. There is no that systematic procedure that you follow together. You look at Arsenal and how they put themselves in that low block to the point that you can't even get past Thomas Partey and Declan Rice when Arsenal are defended for you to even get it. For Manchester City, they will just be walking around you. By the time you realize, they pounce on you with about two or three players and then they steal the ball away from you. You look at the other teams, even Chelsea and the Mauricio Pochettino, you could just identify how they tried to win, you know, duels and then feed off Cole Palmer, who was the main outlet for them in attack. But Manchester United, where is it? It only comes clutch from, let's say, ingenious displays from one of the few figures. And you look at that Garnacho goal, it was just one long ball, one long pass, and then we go and then we manage to get the goal. But after that, how did the game fare for them? So there are still a number of questions about this Manchester United team. Well, more players are coming in. Matias De Ligt, if Mazraoui comes in, fair. But we would have to see how Ten Hag will fare. For Pep Guardiola, just as I always say, he's going to come better with this team from the start of the season.
Very cool. Quick thoughts.
Well, I think Manchester United, from the game against City, I think they're fine. Community Shield, yes, it's a trophy that you can add to your cabinet, but there are more fundamental issues that you need to address. And I think a manager's priority would be, it's almost like a first competitive game after preseason. So you want to weigh what you've done in preseason, where your players are physically, and it's just to get an idea of where your team is. I think the trophy comes as a bonus, and it doesn't really have any effect on the season, whether you win it or lose it. I think both teams would have a fair idea of where they were. I think they measured each other really well. Man United maybe slightly could have won it had they converted their chances. Rashford with two opportunities, Ahmad with that opportunity that maybe if Mount was there, he could have shot himself. I think they created a couple of good opportunities as well, aside scoring. McTominay had a chance as well if he had played into the empty net, and then one that he miscontrolled as well. So I think Man United would feel that they probably did enough to win on the day, ended up losing on penalties. But if the season was to start today or tomorrow or the day after the FA Community Shield, I think Man United are in a better place than Man City, and that's because most of their core players are back. City would need a number of their players to get up to speed. There's Kevin De Bruyne. Rodri is not even back from holiday yet. Phil Foden, same. Grealish is injured. John Stones is also absent as well. Quite a number of players that have left. Alvarez has also left the team. And for United, I think this is closer to their starting 11. And Ten Hag would know that from what he saw, if they can play closer to those levels, then they should be able to win 60-70% of their games.
Yep.
So I think Man United are in a slightly better place than City. But as usual, City would find a way to catch up once the season starts and their players come back. But just quickly on Onana, I think what his antics during the penalty shootout, I think, was more counterproductive than beneficial, because the whole point of your antics is that you want to get into your opponent's head, you want to look big.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to one side and leave the post, you look small.
Mm-hmm.
You don't intimidate your player anymore.
Yeah.
The whole idea is that you don't want him to see empty space. You want him to see you. Once the players, that's the reason why Emi Martinez would walk up to the penalty spot, complain about the ball not being there, be talking trash to you, just to get into your head. So all the time he looks big right in front of you, right before you kick it, then he goes back onto his line. But for Onana, you are rather disadvantaging yourself, because you stay on one side, and before the player kicks it, you are now coming to the center to decide where you dive to. Meanwhile, by the time the player should be kicking, you should have decided and perhaps taken a step to where you want to dive. Because these are professional players who hit with a lot of power and precision.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to get an advantage, you need to move early. But if you are now jumping to the middle whilst the player is about to play and then you dive after, you're at a disadvantage.
And it was so stupid, because he actually pointed to this side and said he should play there, and then he dived there.
And then you just
thinking that the guy was going to
play there.
And it's never worked. I remember Kepa did it against Van Dijk. He was also standing on the right side. Van Dijk played it there, he couldn't even catch it.
Yeah.
It doesn't help goalkeepers in that situation, because the players don't like to see empty space. They like to see empty space. They like to see that, okay, I'm the one dominating here. And they choose their spot, they just hit it hard and score. So I don't know who is teaching him. I think he went for the Ajax goalkeeping coach. I don't know whether he's the one trying to teach him this technique, but you need to do a lot more if you want to save penalties from, you know, these top professionals. Bernardo, I wouldn't credit Onana. I think the Bernardo penalty was just poor.
Yeah, it was just poor. Anyway, let's get into some more in the English Premier League. But we'll be opening the phone lines at just around 7:15 p.m. So you can call us and share your thoughts on the new season. If you're a Chelsea fan, if you're a United fan, if you're an Arsenal fan, just call us and share your thoughts on what you expect. I'll be opening the phone lines from 7:15, and so you might want to get into that. Oriko, I'll stay with you on Chelsea. Maresca, his debut is against Man City.
Yeah, next week. Yeah.
Debuts against Man City. I mean, that's a hard one. It's baptism of fire.
I see you two ways. Either it's your most difficult fixture, you know, against Manchester City. No fixture comes against easier than, you know, playing against the reigning champions. And they are not just the reigning champions of the Premier League. They've won it four times. So back to back to back to back. And it's tough. But, you know, the thing about facing a team like Man City is that there's a lot of pressure on you, especially for Maresca. That will be his first competitive game. But, you know, the same hot water that you can use to boil an egg to make it hard is the same hot water that you can use to boil potato to make it soft. I learned that from a Nigerian friend this weekend. I just felt like using it. Anyway, so the meaning is that, like, I feel your first game, huge pressure. You can turn that pressure into something good. Use that to motivate your boys to really get them up to the task. And who knows, if you beat Manchester City, that could be a level raiser for your team. Then you can start on a very high note. But it could also go the other way, where you are battered by Manchester City and then there are so many question marks. It reduces your confidence, throws all the works that you've done in preseason in doubt. And I'm just hoping that it's the former rather than the latter. That
you think he gets battered, though? I mean,
in that game?
In that game.
Well, I don't think Man City are in their optimal state yet, which is good for Chelsea. I don't think someone like Foden would just come in from the break and start. Rodri probably would also come in from the break and start. Kyle Walker, same. And Kevin De Bruyne, I doubt, would also be able to play the full match. So a number of their key players would be absent. So I think that sort of levels the playing field. Mm. But you can't discount the experience that, you know, this Pep Guardiola team has. I still think that they would be very difficult to play. But even under Pochettino, we saw Chelsea sort of match up to them, especially at Stamford Bridge in that 4-4, and then they went away to Etihad, played a 1-1 draw as well. So, I mean, historically, in the past few seasons, Chelsea have held their own against Manchester City, but it's a different ball game, different coach, different approach, different players. We've had a number of signings, and so I do expect different results. And I think it's important that no matter what happens next week, Chelsea stays in the game. Because if it's an embarrassing defeat, I just think that all of a sudden the discourse around Maresca, the whole Chelsea project, would change. And it would be so drastic that it can affect the team.
Oriku, before I move to the others, give me your prediction for who would make the top four this season. Quickly, before I go to the others.
In order.
Sorry?
In order.
Oh, I mean, in order.
I think...
Producer, record it all.
I think Liverpool win the league. Hey! Yeah, I think Liverpool. I have a funny feeling. That's all you can have at this point, to be honest. A lot can change in 9 months. So everything is based on gut. But I do think Liverpool have looked sharp in preseason, and that's all I have to measure against. I think Liverpool would win the league. I think Arsenal come in second. I think City come in third. Fourth will be Manchester United.
Okay. Very cool. Thank you so much for your Fantastic prediction. Bill, talk to me about Arsenal. Is your team ready for the season?
It's looking good. Apart from an earlier defeat, I saw a bit of Arsenal by Leverkusen. They really outclassed them in every facet, winning by 4-1. And earlier today, they defeated Lyon 2-0 as well to win the Emirates FA Cup. But my personal fear is the team doesn't have, first of all, a number 9 who is close to the level of Haaland. That is one huge problem that Arteta has to fix. It's good that he's gotten Calafiori. Very good, because he brings something slightly different to Zinchenko. He's a better ball carrier. He can also pass the ball as well, and he can slot in a centre-back, slot in a midfield too if he wants to. So that is good. But the striker is one key thing that we need in the team. And not just any striker. One that will score at least 20 goals in the Premier League. Can guarantee 20 goals. That will give us a real shot at winning the league. Because honestly, despite the number of goals we scored last season, which was second best, it was always clear that we lacked a top level striker. And so that puts more pressure on the likes of Odegaard, who is more of a creator, to score more goals. Bukayo Saka to score more goals. Martinelli was off most of the season, so he could barely score. Trossard was scoring, but from the bench. Gabriel Jesus was non-existent. Totally non-existent last season. Nketiah, same. So we need that number 9. Another position we have to fill is, I would say, a jack-up position. Because Xhaka was playing at the left-hand side of midfield. He was a very good connector from the defense to Gabriel Martinelli. Because of Xhaka's presence, Martinelli could deliver a lot more goals. Martinelli's best season was Xhaka's best season too. They were connecting very, very well on the left-hand side. And that is why I understand they are going for Merino to come and fill that hole. Hopefully that deal is concluded as soon as possible.
Yep.
And one last spot. Saka's competition, or should I say backup, because Mikel Arteta, I beg you, we don't want to see another whole season where Saka has to play all 38 games. He's not a robot. Even Haaland was getting rests.
Are you trying to say Haaland's a robot?
Oh, they call him a robot. They call him a robot. Even he tweets with the robot. So but even him was getting rest. Saka, for 2 seasons, has barely gotten rest, both at Arsenal and at England. So, Arteta, I beg you, we need a right winger or someone who can play across the front line and slot in for Saka when we need him to have a rest, because we need him to have a rest so he can perform well.
All right, give me your top 4.
If we get all the positions filled.
Hey, give me your top 4. I don't want to even get positions. Give me your top 4.
Arsenal first. Okay. We are winning the league.
Okay.
And Slot is doing... He's looking like he's doing well. So I'll give him second. I feel this will be Pep's last season at Manchester City. Third. And then, for 4th slot... between Manchester United and Liverpool. Manchester United and Tottenham. I'll take Manchester United. Yeah, Ten Hag needs to be back in the Champions League.
Okay. Anyway, the two of you, what you've seen of Ancelotti, I don't know, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, Kelvin, talk to me about... just what we should expect next year in the English Premier League.
I think it's going to be powerful. It's going to be mega. Mikel Arteta will try to do his best to win the league. Pep Guardiola will continue to try to keep his dominance. And as we know him, he never gets satisfied with anything. He's always looking at getting the very best. Arne Slot, from what he's heard about Jurgen Klopp, will definitely want to win the Premier League or make amends and will not be like Klopp, who would be second, and at the end of the day, Liverpool fans will make us feel that he's the greatest ever manager we've seen in the Premier League. But I don't think he even comes too close to the lot, as many times as we want to make him look like. For a club like Chelsea, I don't know how Enzo Maresca is going to solve the defensive woes, because he doesn't seem to have any other options anywhere. But they are Shilimwan or Debebosa. And those guys have proven that at top level, they don't even get to the standards of Mark Gehi and Louis Dunk. So how then do you win Chelsea a Premier League title with these defenders? We knew how Chelsea managed to win the Premier League when they had, you know, the big guys in there. The likes of John Terry, the likes of Carvalho, you know, you had the Ashley Coles. Even, Oroku, do you remember this defender? Khalid Bularus.
Yeah, Bularus.
And all these, you know, Bosengwa and all the likes. They weren't extremely top there, but they were players you could count on. Even in the latter stages when Thiago Silva, David Luiz and the likes, you could have confidence that at least Luiz will give you a stinker in one of the games, but he can give you consistent number of games where it's going to be difficult to get past him. But this is a Chelsea defense that is so easy to walk through. I think that is going to be a different, but it's going to be highly competitive, especially in the top three. And let's not forget that Unai Emery may be on the outside. Let's not forget he was a top four finisher this season.
Yep.
And he's actually strengthened his squad with a number of very good players.
I agree.
He is going to come stronger. Maybe on the blind side of people, they are doing their preseason with less attention. But when the season starts properly, he's going to do his business bit by bit. Maybe he will struggle with the top gangs. But those who are below him, or those who were below him last season, he's going to get the points. And it would now be left with Arsenal, Manchester City, Chelsea, Liverpool, Manchester United, and the likes, Tottenham Hotspur, to try struggle and battle for those three spots or four spots which would be available. So I expect a very, very competitive season ahead. But my interest is in the Ghanaian players and how they are going to fare. Someone like Fatou Shahaku, Mohamed Kudus, now knows that the entire West Ham team rests on his shoulders, and they have made it clear, putting pressure on him, and he should be able to handle it and deliver. After a very good season, first season in England, he knows that this team is going to rest on his shoulders like Merlin, the opening line of Merlin.
Thank you to Riku, Ampofo, and Billy Shen as well, who are all here with me throughout the 1 hour, 30 minutes to bring you a lot of action in sports here. So we are closing it out here on Sports Ultras, and far away in Paris, in France, they're also closing it out there on the Olympics. But next weekend, we are back again with another exciting edition, and we are back with the English Premier League, because it begins this Friday when Manchester United take on Fulham at Old Trafford.